Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week coming up for the end of the hour. Dr. Robin Chutkan is a gastroenterologist. She's the founder of the Digestive Center for Women, and her book is out called Gut Bliss. Gut Bliss, yes, it's a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage, as published by Avery Books. Doc, thanks for coming on. We don't want the guys to turn off on this segment. Any information for the fellas listening today on the show?
There's actually lots of great information in here for men, too. Now, there are a couple causes of bloating that are equal opportunity employers, and those are things like the food that you eat and some gastrointestinal conditions like diverticulosis, gallbladder problems. But there are also a couple causes of bloating that are really unique to women, and one of them is the fact that women have longer colons than men.
But you do see guys in your office, right?
Oh, I absolutely do. About 20% of the patients I see are men.
Okay, so there's some information for the fellows to stick around for. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
Now, how long is the average intestine and colon, Robin?
So the average colon is somewhere between 4 and 6 feet. Of course, the digestive tract is a lot longer than that. It's about 30 feet from the mouth all the way down to the anus. But women on average have an extra 4 to 5 inches, and this extra length means lots more twists and turns, what we've called in the past a redundant colon. I prefer to call it a voluptuous colon. So this means that women tend to be much more bloated, much more constipated, just have a much more difficult time eliminating gas and the products of digestion.
Even though it's only 4 inches out of 23 feet.
Because it's it's 4 inches out of 4 feet, because it's really the extra length is the colon. But it's not just the length, it's the fact that in women, we have a wider pelvis. So most of our colon falls down in the pelvis, and it has to compete for space with the reproductive organs, with the uterus and the fallopian tubes and the ovaries. Men have a more narrow android pelvis, and so most of their colon is up in the abdomen, so there's lots more room. And it's why colonoscopy takes so much longer in women, and typically why they require more sedation.
Now, I wanted to get to how to identify the cause of what you call bacterial imbalance. And by the way, we should say that people can find a lot more information at www.gutbliss, GUTBLISS, which is the name of the book, .com, Gutbliss. So tell us about, give us more information, if you will, on how to identify the cause of bacterial imbalance or dysbiosis.
So what we're finding out is that things that you can't see in the GI tract, like the microscopic bacteria there, may actually be more important than the things you can. There are more bacteria in your colon than there are cells in your entire body. And although we can't see them, if we scraped them all up, they'd weigh about 3 to 4 pounds. And most of us, when things are in balance, have a ratio that's roughly 80% good to 20% bad.
So that is of the bacteria.
Of the bacteria.
80% of them are what you would call beneficial or innocuous, and 20% of them are potentially dangerous?
Potentially problematic. That's absolutely right. And what happens is that with the widespread use of antibiotics, so when you take an antibiotic for sinus infection or a bladder infection, it kills off some of the problematic bacteria, but it also kills off lots of the good bacteria in droves. And so your good gut bacteria, if you will, end up taking a hit. And if you're somebody who's been on antibiotics repeatedly, or some people are on them chronically for things like Lyme disease or skin problems, you can really end up with a depleted gut bacteria. There are other things that can affect your gut bacteria, too. It's not just antibiotics. The food you eat is a huge determinant of what kind of gut bacteria you have. So what we're finding is that a Western diet that's higher in sugar and fat and lower in plants ends up causing this sort of imbalance. So we have bacterial species that are more associated with autoimmune disease and obesity compared to people in, say, sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia who eat a more plant-based diet and don't use as many medications.
And now, how does one identify whether that's the cause of a problem or whether it is something else, such as, if you will, a food intolerance of some other kind? In other words, how does one say, this is really due to the bacteria in my gut and my changing those bacteria with my food, versus this is really due to just my intolerance to this food, or, if you will, redundant colon or whatever else possibility?
It's a terrific and really important question. And dysbiosis is something that we don't have a sort of yes or no 100% accurate test. There are some tests that we do, breath tests for bacterial overgrowth, when we're looking for something called SIBO, S-I-B-O, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which means more bacteria up in the small intestine as opposed to down in the colon. So these breath tests we can do, what we're doing is we're detecting the levels of hydrogen and methane produced by these bacteria after we give the patient something to eat. But they're not perfect tests by any stretch of the imagination. They tend to not be that accurate, so you have to be a bit of a medical detective. So the first thing you do is you take a good history, and you find out, you know, has this person been on a lot of antibiotics? What have they been eating? And then you ask them about signs and symptoms. And what's interesting, particularly in women, is that they often will give a history of frequent vaginal yeast infection. Sometimes on the physical exam, you'll look under their arm, and you can see yeast proliferating onto the arm or in the groin area. Sometimes they have thrush in their mouth, which is a proliferation of yeast. So often there are clues, fungal infections in the nails. There are often clues on the physical exam, in addition to their complaints of bloating and not feeling well, that really tip you off. So it's really the combination. It's sort of the good old way to make a diagnosis in medicine. It's the history, the physical exam, as well as the complaints they tell you, and plus minus a breath test. Sometimes that's helpful.
If they haven't had antibiotics, are there enough antibiotics in the foods we eat to cause the same problem, or is it much more common in people who formerly had an antibiotic?
Well, it's a fascinating area, this idea of how we're getting antibiotics. And the New York Times published an article a couple years ago that reported an astounding 80% of all antibiotics sold in the U.S. are sold for animal consumption, for this sort of industrial agricultural production of animal products. And so that's quite shocking, that 80% of the antibiotics being distributed are being used for animals. Most of the patients I see, even the ones who are eating a lot of animal products, really have a history of additional antibiotic use. So even though cumulatively we worry, and I think folks like myself who are over 40 who were eating a lot of meat before they started using antibiotics in the meat are a little bit protected, but I have an 8-year-old and I worry about her, because I think unless you sort of, you know, have an animal pulled up in your backyard, you're not ever completely sure. So, you know, it will be interesting to see with this younger generation 40, 50 years down the road after all this antibiotic use and the food that they're eating, what's going to happen. But for right now, most of the adults I see with dysbiosis have a clear history of additional antibiotic use or steroids. That's another huge one that can shift the
now,
bacterial
Connie,
balance.
Connie asked us on the email line, and Joe will give you the email line, but Connie asked us on the email line, how long after I change my diet should I see a change in my bloating?
So I think 6 weeks is a reasonable period of time if you are dealing with dysbiosis. It takes a lot longer than if you're just dealing with a food intolerance. And I recommend a sort of three-pronged approach. The first is to stop the offending agent, stop the antibiotics, stop the steroids, stop, you know, whatever it is that's contributing. The second is to change the diet and eat lots of leafy greens and sort of high-fiber fruits and vegetables, particularly vegetables, things like artichokes and asparagus, things that produce a sort of fiber that bacteria like and that help to grow your good bacteria, essentially. You have a little zoo in there. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is to eliminate some of the things that we know tend to favor the not-so-beneficial species, so all the sugary, starchy stuff.
And when you do that, so it takes a little while to do that, Robin, right? And when you do that, it's 6 weeks after you've completed that you'll notice a change. And we'll take that question when we come back. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. udocs@gmail.com. udocs@gmail.com is the email address. Robin Chutkan, author of Gut Bliss, a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage. You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.